are going to learn more about fear and anger and rage this hour and how we respond as we talk with the author of Why We Snap, Understanding the Rage Circuit in Your Brain. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 8.5 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Tuesday, January 19th. Let's say someone cuts in line in front of you. How do you react? How about if the driver in the next car screams at you in a rage frenzy? Why do some people shrug off unpleasant encounters while others snap? We will talk with our guest neurobiologist about the triggers to rage and how we respond to rage. And we welcome your questions and your own examples. How do you deal with anger? How do you deal with others getting angry? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is R. Douglas Fields. He's the chief of the Nervous System Development and Plasticity section at the National Institute of Child Health and Human Development. His latest book is Why We Snap, Understanding the Rage Circuit in Your Brain. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks a lot for being with us. Tell us about this incident in 2010 where you snapped.
Yeah, that was the inspiration for this book. So I was attending a neuroscience meeting in Barcelona. And in this case, my 17-year-old daughter was joining me. That's very unusual. And before going off to the lecture to give my talk, we had a few hours, so we decided to go see the Gaudi Cathedral. We're walking up out of the metro, and suddenly I feel this tug at my zippered pocket above my knee. I had cargo pants on.
Mm-hmm.
And I slapped it like a mosquito and felt my wallet was gone.
Uh-oh.
So I instantly, my left arm shot back, grabbed the guy, and I threw him to the ground and got on his back and put him in a headlock. Now, first of all, your listeners need to realize, you know, I'm not Arnold Schwarzenegger. They've got a, you know, Woody Allen flipping out is what you have to think of, because, you know, I'm 130 pounds, wire rim glasses, gray hair. But in any case, I throw this guy to the ground. I start getting into this street fight to get my wallet back, and at that point, this thought bubbles up to my head. What are you doing?
Yeah.
And I realized that I had engaged in this battle, struggle, on an impulse with no conscious thought.
Yeah.
And I realized that, of course, in a dangerous situation, many dangerous situations, there's no time for conscious thought. And that's what kind of led me into wondering, geez, how does this work? If there's something in your environment that can trip this snapping, aggressive, violent response, I wanted to know how that worked and how to control it. So that was the story that got me into this situation.
You have to know. Obviously, you survived that encounter. How did the other guy look?
Well, I did get my wallet back, you know, I think it was significant that my daughter was there. Part of the doing this book was to understand, would I always do this? You know, why did I do it, and what are the factors? But one of the physiological aspects of snapping is tunnel vision. I was so fixated on this one robber that I didn't realize that he was part of a gang.
Oh.
So, in fact, the rest of the gang, after I got my wallet back, the rest of the gang then chased Kelly and I through Barcelona for the next 2 hours, and then it was like a scene from a spy movie. It was really pretty terrifying.
Oh, my gosh.
So, yeah.
So I can understand why that motivated you to investigate this phenomenon, and we will talk about the 9 triggers that you discovered that trigger our rage. And what happened there in this situation when you were pickpocketed, you were, perceiving a threat to yourself or your family, your daughter?
Well, that's what's so interesting is I didn't perceive anything. I was completely oblivious to this threat. I was thinking about, you know, where we're going, engaging in a nice conversation with my daughter. And so this is all automatic. That is one of the things that's so bewildering about snapping, when you hear somebody snap and, you know, smash a dish or wrap a golf club around a tree. What's bewildering is that it's not deliberate. It's unconscious, and it happens faster than the speed of thought, and often we regret it.
Yes.
So, yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about some of the triggers, though. One of them is life or death, and you say almost anyone will snap and or defend themselves in what is perceived as a life or death attack.
Yeah, but I think before I give the triggers, it would be good to give a little perspective on where these triggers came from. Would that be all right?
Sure. What do you want to add?
Okay. So this response comes from the brain's threat detection. Since this is not conscious, this is not involved in part of the brain, the cerebral cortex, which is where consciousness arises. So this comes from a part of the brain beneath our consciousness. What this is part of the brain's threat detection mechanism. So deep in the brain, in a region called the hypothalamus, there is a hypothalamic attack area. And if you stimulate with an electrode neurons in the hypothalamic attack area in a mouse or in their cat or other experimental animal, it will instantly engage in a violent reaction and kill a test animal. So in its cage. So although I was coming up out of the metro station consciously involved in my own thoughts, my unconscious brain, my brain's threat detection mechanism, is taking in all the sensory information, internal, external status information, to constantly be on the lookout for threats. So it knew the bad guy was there, but I didn't know. And when our unconscious threat detection mechanism detects danger, then it trips this hypothalamic attack response. So the point is that we're all hardwired for violence. We need to have violence to protect ourselves if we're attacked, to protect our young. We you know, as a species, we eat meat, so we have to kill animals. So that then becomes what trips this circuit for the hypothalamic attack area. So the approach in the book, there's a large body of psychology research on aggression, but that's not the approach in this book. This book, I go into the brain, look at the new research on this threat detection mechanism and sudden aggression in the brain, and find out, ask, what are the circuits that will trip this hypothalamic attack area to cause this sudden aggression?
Okay.
And it turns out there are 9 specific circuits that will do this. So, I mean, it seems like when we read in the paper, somebody snaps and it's so bewildering, it seems like anything can set it off. But in fact, only very specific triggers, 9 very specific triggers, will cause this sudden aggression, and it makes sense. It's a very risky behavior for an animal.
Yeah.
So that's the background to the triggers.
So there are 9 triggers, and let's briefly cover them, and you use the word, I guess, life morts to understand them or to remember them. What are the 9 triggers?
Right. So life morts is a mnemonic that I have devised because scientists use different terminology for these circuits. And the important point is these 9 triggers have separate circuits. So a mother will instantly engage in violence to protect her young if attacked. That scientists call that maternal aggression. Scientists can knock out that particular circuit, and the mother will no longer protect her offspring, but she will still respond in rage to another provocation, like being attacked, defensive, self-defensive. So for the purposes of getting around the jargon, so much of science is jargon that gets in the way, I came up with the life morts. And an additional reason is if you learn these life morts, you can control this snapping reaction. So life mort stands for L is life or limb. I'll just go through them first,
sure.
And then we can come back. L, life or limb. I, insult. F, family. E, environment. M, mate. O, order in society. R, resources. T, tribe. And S, stopped. So these are all independent circuits. That life or limb trigger is the one I already discussed in terms of self-defense. If you're attacked, you will instantly respond aggressively to defend yourself.
Yeah, but we might aggressively defend ourselves if somebody insults us?
Yeah, and the reason is that we are social species, and our success in our social in our society depends on our rank in society. We share these mechanisms with other animals, and other animals determine their space in society by their rank, by physical aggression. And insult substitutes for that for humans because we have language.
Yeah, let me jump in because we do have a newscast coming up, and then when we come back, we will go into more depth into the 9 triggers that explain why we snap. And we will welcome your questions for our guest at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. The news is next. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. We are talking about the triggers of rage this hour, the circumstances that could lead us to snap. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are talking with our guest scientist, a neurobiologist, exploring the links between our evolutionary hardwiring and the present moment triggers that could cause us to snap. And we are welcoming your questions, maybe even your own examples. What makes you so mad that you snap? Do you have any examples you'd like to share? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Doug Fields. He is the author of Why We Snap, Understanding the Rage Circuit in Your Brain. And we have a caller who has an example that will add to the discussion. Dan in Drummond is with us. Hi, Dan.
Hello. I had a niece a couple of years ago that was invited to go over to over to France to write some dance music. And while she was over there the second time, she was waiting on the train platform to go to the airport about 4 o'clock in the morning, and some guy comes running up and grabs her backpack and laptop in it, and she drops everything, screams bloody murder, runs after him, tackles him, socks him, takes her backpack back, hangs on to the guy until the cops come.
Wow. Well, she got her... she snapped, I guess, huh? And sometimes...
Yeah.
What do you think, Dan, of that, Doug?
Dan, that's exactly the same thing that happened to me, and this is what intrigued me so much to get into this subject. Because, of course, if I had thought about it, I never would have done what I did. You should give the person your wallet, obviously. No, it's not worth risking your life. But I didn't think about it. And then this raises all these questions. Would I have done the same thing if my daughter hadn't been there? Would I always react the same if caught unawares in a similar situation? Would different people, are they predisposed to freeze or flight or fight? All these interesting questions. And it brings a very important point I want to make is that we call it snapping only when the result is inappropriate. These circuits exist in the brain because we need them, and they're important, and they do an amazing job. And when they work properly, as they do almost 90% of the time, we call it quick thinking or heroism. We don't call it snapping. So snapping is when these circuits of sudden aggression are inappropriately activated. That's snapping.
Yeah, that's an interesting with Dan's niece too, and to a certain extent, your brain just made you react that way. Maybe you thought that your life was in danger, but in this case, the guy was running away with her backpack. This wasn't life or death. This was her possession that was going away.
Right, and again, she didn't think. She reacted. So the trigger in that case was the R trigger. And it's the same one that was tripped in my brain, except a couple of others, because my daughter was there. But the R trigger is resources.
Mm-hmm.
If your docile pet dog will suddenly snap and rage if another dog comes over to his food dish, okay?
Right.
We have all of these triggers. We have this circuitry in our brain because we've inherited it through evolution of the brain in survival of the fittest world. So we will respond just like your pet. When our resources are taken, and so in that in human world, that's money and valuables. So we are hardwired to have that response to aggressively confront that thief, because our survival 100,000 years ago depended on that. There was, you know, aggression was necessary for survival, and in certain circumstances, it still is today.
Yeah, and you mentioned heroism. Some people will chase that backpack snatcher, and it's not even their backpack,
or right.
You know, so and something has triggered in them that they're going to, or if they see somebody being bullied, or if they see even a social injustice.
That's so fascinating, because when a hero does something like Spencer Stone, who jumped up on that train in Paris and with his friends and took out that terrorist with a knife and an AK-47, or almost in any case where somebody responds instantly, does something heroic to rescue someone else, to risk their own life to help somebody else in danger. Immediately afterwards, when they're asked, well, why did you do that? What were you thinking? And they go, well, I didn't think. I just reacted. It's this same circuitry. In that case, it's the tribe trigger of sudden aggression. So human beings, being social, we're totally dependent on our society. Like other social animals, we group together for defense. 100,000 years ago in the plains of Africa, we were isolated. We lived in small populations. An encounter with another strange group of people was a threat. So the brain has circuitry that within 170 milliseconds, a fraction of a second of seeing someone, will categorize that person into us versus them. It's unconscious, and it's instant. Now, of course, that's the seeds of racism and tribal, gang warfare and wars. But at the same time, the same circuitry is what unites us. It allows us to form cohesive, cooperative groups for mutual defense, as, Spencer Stone did instantly. He felt his tribe threatened. So the point is, again, that these circuits, we have them because we need them, and they're a double-edged sword. And it's only when they are tripped inappropriately that we call it snapping. But the modern world, the problem is, the modern world presses on these triggers. And there are situations in the modern world that didn't exist when these circuits were laid down and sharpened in the human brain. Like driving a car.
Our guest is Doug Fields. He is the author of Why We Snap, Understanding the Rage Circuit in Your Brain, The 9 Triggers Revealed. And we are talking about those triggers, the 9 triggers of rage. They include life or death, insult, family, environment, mate, order in society, resources, tribe, and stopped. And we are welcoming your questions, welcoming your own examples or experiences at 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. And Doug, is that tribe trigger, is that an example of when snapping can actually be a good thing?
Yeah, that is the reason for heroism. That is why somebody will act to selflessly to protect the group. That's why we have that trigger.
And but in most cases, are these triggers of rage not so good?
No, in most cases they are good. And again, when they work properly, we call it quick thinking. We see this on the athletic field. We call it heroism. A third of the book, it's not all a dark book about aggression, a third of the book is interviewing people who work in dangerous situations or elite athletes where they need this rapid response. Athletes, I interviewed SEAL Team 6 members, Secret Service agents, elite athletes, members of baseball. They all rely on this circuitry.
And I'm sorry, I'm trying to say when we snap, that's the inappropriate reaction. So what causes someone to snap versus just being a quick thinker?
Well, it's a misfire. So we don't want to suppress this circuit if it really is an appropriate response, a life-preserving response. Let me give an example. Many of your listeners, I presume, are now commuting in traffic. It turns out that road rage hits almost all these triggers. And it's because our brain, you know, didn't understand. This is a foreign experience to the human brain. The human brain is grappling with a situation it was never designed to deal with. So, for example, you're in traffic. There's a big backup. Suddenly, you're enraged. Yeah. Why? Why, of all the emotions, of all the behaviors human beings can have, why aren't you bored or sleepy or something else? But no, you're held up in traffic, and instantly you find this fuming rage, and you want to, you know, kick something.
Yeah, why is that?
and in fact, you know, you see these people, and they will go berserk and set on a fight and pursue somebody and, you know, and get into a fist fight, in some cases pull out a gun. Well, the reason is you've hit the stopped trigger by being held up in traffic. You are being restrained. That provokes this circuit designed to allow you to escape from restraint, but it's inappropriate. You know, this circuit knows about quicksand and being grabbed by the ankles by a predator. It doesn't know about freeways. That's 100,000 years in the future. So that's what happens. So this is how you can control that. So if you're in your car and you suddenly feel this rising anger, what you have to do is instantly try to identify which of these triggers may be tripped. And as I said, almost all of them get tripped on the road. If you can do that quickly, you will see that, oh, it's a misfire. Releasing aggression and violence is not actually going to help the situation. I feel this because it's normal, but it's a misfire of the circuit. Then the rage will subside, and that's much better than the anger management approach, you know, put a lid on it kind of thing. If you tell somebody who's angry to calm down, it doesn't help usually, and it kind of enrages them more. So it's better if you could answer, why am I suddenly angry?
Yeah, I get it. And I'm thinking of a really silly example where I was really angry at a car salesman the other day, but I didn't punch him out. You know, I realized he was, I think, maybe threatening resources. And I ended up, I did a just breathe kind of a solution to that.
What was it? I mean, the situation.
Oh, it was just, feeling as though I was being ripped off.
Right, right. So that would be resources. And in that situation a lot, it's also insult. I can imagine, I don't know the specifics, but of course insult is the cause of a lot of barroom brawls, and there used to be duels to the death over insult. If people start to, demean you, and you feel your rank in society is being threatened, then we're just hardwired to respond aggressively to that, because that's the way our mammalian ancestors would respond, and we have that same circuit.
Yeah. Now, is there a difference between how women and men react to triggers?
Really fascinating differences between the sexes. When you look at the facts involved in sudden aggression, sex is the most important factor. 90% of people in prison for violent crimes are men. But at the same time, 90% of the people who have been awarded heroism medals from the Carnegie Foundation are men. And a quarter of those people gave their life, died, to protect somebody who was in danger, very often a complete stranger. But, you know, these are huge differences between the male and female response. It had fundamentally to do with traditional roles through the course of evolution on gender-specific roles. So, and differences between males and females. It makes no sense for a female to get into a fight with a male, physical battle, who weighs 100 pounds more than her. So women don't do that.
Mm-hmm.
So women respond with indirect aggression, gossip, sabotage, that sort of thing. But in addition, our brains, men and women's brains, are wired differently for threats. And, for example, a man wandering around the street never thinks about the possibility of being sexually assaulted. Unfortunately, females always have to have that in the back of their mind. And that has changed the way that being female roles and risk, have changed the way males and female brains are wired anatomically and functionally in responding to threats. I don't know if we have time. I could give you an example, but...
Well, yeah, we do. We have a couple of minutes before newscast. I'm also, though, I was intrigued when you said, you know, the fear of sexual assault. How does fear play into all of this?
Well, fear is involved in the same circuitry. And, of course, you know, if you're going to freeze or run as opposed to fight, this will involve fear. And fear is part of this threat detection mechanism. And fear also sharpens your senses. In the book, I interview somebody with a brain disorder, and she has no fear. And the lack of fear is really dangerous. So when my daughter and I were being pursued through Barcelona for 2 hours by this gang, it quickly became apparent that Kelly, my daughter, picked these guys out of the crowd much quicker than I did. So in looking at the literature and talking to experts who do brain recordings, males and females operate differently under times of threat. Under stress, the female brain uses the left hemisphere, and the male brain uses the right hemisphere. What that means is the females in this threatening, stressful moment start looking at the details and seeing and analyzing, getting down the weeds. And that's what my daughter was doing. She could find these recognize these faces. Women are very good at detecting, neuroscience, brain imaging shows this, detecting intent in people based on subtle cues like facial expression. Whereas I was looking at the big picture, you know, trying to think grand scheme. How am I going to outwit these guys? What am I going to do when we encounter them? And I was using my right hemisphere. And boy, when you put those two together, it's a very dynamic, very powerful combination.
We have a caller. Let's get on before news. Laura in Appleton. Hi, Laura.
Hi. I was wondering, what is the role of everyday stressors that kind of build in losing your cool? And I've noticed, you know, no two people have the same reaction to this sort of thing. But what I'm talking about are just kind of those things that maybe in calmer moments you can handle, but they build and build and build throughout the day until you snap at someone and start yelling. Like, for example, my husband likes a lot of auditory input. So he can have three televisions on and then go in the bathroom, turn on the radio, and come out and then crank up the stereo. And I find that to be very jarring, very annoying. And if it goes on, we'll start yelling at each other. Or when I feel like I have to continually nag my daughter to get out the door in the morning, you know, go brush your teeth for the fifth time, go get dressed, do this, do that, until before you know it, I'm yelling at her and the day's off to a bad start. So what, if anything, are those? What's the role of little stressors?
Yeah, interesting.
Laura, you've hit on the very key, important point in this whole thing. And, you know, if you read the book, you get to the end, you'll understand why I reacted the way I did, which to me was very uncharacteristic. Stress is so important. You know, we read in the paper every day about these people who snap and do something violent. We usually don't know the backstory. People just don't snap. They're under chronic stress. Why does chronic stress do this? Chronic stress is your unconscious brain, your threat detection mechanism, taking in all this situational information about the environment, your internal state, and coming to the conclusion that you're in danger. When you're in danger, the physiological response is to put your triggers of aggression, your life more triggers, on high alert. That makes sense. You know, we would do that in times of threatening situations to go on high alert. That's what happens. And you need that. You need that response. But that means that you're more prone to misfiring. So some trivial little incident, because you're dealing with chronic stresses, will cause a misfiring of these circuits.
Yeah.
So yeah, chronic stress is very, very important. And but think about it, it has to be. That's one of the beauties of this mechanism. Think how complex this process is to be able to work and have the right response in really complicated situations that are situation specific. The threshold on these triggers is constantly being adjusted by internal, external factors, and chronic stress is an important one.
We need to check news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio, and then we'll continue talking about why we snap. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are talking with the author of Why We Snap, Understanding the Rage Circuit in Your Brain. And we are welcoming your questions or experiences at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. R. Douglas Fields is the chief of the Nervous System Development and Plasticity section at the National Institute of Child Health and Human Development. He is the author of Why We Snap, Understanding the Rage Circuit in Your Brain. And Doug, going back to our caller just before news time, who has the husband who puts on a gazillion TVs and radios and stereos and drives her bonkers, and I guess kids who, you know, have to be reminded five times to brush their teeth. You mentioned that, you know, chronic stress has a lot to do with why we snap. But how does somebody in that kind of situation, control their rage? I mean, she's not stabbing anybody, but she's probably yelling at them.
Yeah, we all understand the situation. The first step in controlling anything is understanding it. So just simply understanding this mechanism, that it's not pathology, that we need it, and how stress affects this can be helpful. And many times you can identify the source of stress and do something about it. Many times you can't. Sometimes sources of stress are beyond your control, a death in the family or something. But just knowing that in this situation you are increased chances of snapping, you can be on guard. It's like walking around with the safety off on a firearm. You got to be extra careful. It's also helpful in dealing with somebody in public, a stranger who suddenly behaves aggressively and is under stress. Apparently under stress, that can help you manage that situation so it doesn't inflame the situation. And of course, there are many techniques for stress management that can lower chronic stress, and those are all helpful. But I think just the fact of understanding this mechanism and realizing, well, this is why it's happening, because it makes perfect sense biologically. Your unconscious brain threat detection mechanism cannot talk. It can't communicate with your cerebral cortex and lay out a rational explanation for why it's concluded you're in danger. Our unconscious threat detection mechanism communicates with the brain through emotions. Stress is one of them. Stress is you are in danger. Fear is you are an immediate threat. We have all of these emotions, jealousy, etc. And that's one thing I'd like to correct, that we're not driven to rage by our emotions, by anger or jealousy or frustration. Those are the result of your unconscious brain taking in this enormous amount of information, instantly concluding you're in danger and communicating that kind of danger to you in the only way it can, which is with these emotions. And then that motivates our behavior.
What is the connection between the rage circuit and mass shootings like the ones we've seen in Sandy Hook or Columbine or even San Bernardino?
Yeah, so that's a good point. Some of these things are the result of pathology, mental illness, sickening Sandy Hook thing. That's not what this book's about. Those are broken minds. We hope to be able to heal them someday, but we're not going to understand that. But so much rage attacks and shootings, workplace shootings, does involve this rage circuitry. When I read the paper and you as a broadcaster, every day you deal with these news reports, by and large, they're not psychopaths or mentally ill people. They're people who have snapped. And so it's these triggers that will cause aggression. Again, no animal or human being will not engage in aggression without very specific provocations. So, the title of any book kind of is always a little hard to get the full scope of the book. So the book includes, aggression in general. These circuits in the brain, the threat detection circuitry in the brain that controls this instantaneous response, is regulated by the prefrontal cortex. We can suppress it. I interviewed many nonviolent people like Jains and Quakers, and it can also be activated by it. you know this, if you're in a movie, Jaws, and it's scary and some loud noise, a bang, and it's innocent noise, but we jump. That's your cortex activating this circuit. So in these mass shootings, trying to understand, they always seem senseless, and police talk about motive. Well, there's no motive in many cases. It's emotional. These people are enraged, and it is can be traced in most of these cases to one of these triggers, and that can help diffuse the situation. If people become aware that this person is, in jeopardy of having one of these triggers tripped in their mind. So,
yeah, let's take a call from Kelly in Salem next. Hello, Kelly.
Hi, how are you? Thanks for having me. Yeah,
thanks for calling. What is your question or example?
Well, I think that was an excellent segue to what I wanted to comment about. Actually, what I do is I work with teams in a workplace environment, and we teach them in order to have a better functioning team and to come to solutions where you're looking at data and making logical responses, how to recognize when that defense mechanism comes into play. So, you know, when you're in a fight or flight situation, the blood in your body leaves different areas that you're ready to fight or flight. So it leaves your stomach area, it goes to your arms, goes to your legs, also leaves your frontal cortex where logic and thought and reason happens. So we work with them to try to, manage that and understand when defensiveness can happen. And I thought it was pretty interesting that you brought up order. Because I think a lot of times in a team environment at work, that social order within work is often threatened. You know, if you had a thought or a solution or something you've done year after year after year and you just know you're right, if that's put into question, well, then maybe your intelligence is questioned. Maybe your rank within the office is questioned. Go ahead. Sorry.
I was just going to say, you've hit on so many important key points here, and one of the reasons that I wanted to write this book is teens and children. The approach of telling them not to be angry has really limited ability to stop the behavior. The kids know that they shouldn't have been angry or snapped. What kids need to know is why they're angry, and understand that, you know, this is because it's going to provoke anger because of this legacy in our brain, but it's inappropriate. That can be really helpful. And the second point you made is that the prefrontal cortex is what inhibits this circuit, and that circuitry is not completely formed until your early 20s, and that's why we don't hold teenagers criminally responsible. So you can't appeal to a part of the brain that is not there, not functioning, to control this response. And the last thing I'd like to point out is you mentioned fight or flight. That's really important. But I want to distinguish that from this instantaneous response, definitely a part of the mechanism, but the instantaneous response. When I grabbed that robber, that was not the fight or flight response, because that happened within a third of a second. And the fight or flight response is a hormonal response, adrenaline being pumped into your bloodstream, elevating your body to massive power and preparing to fight or run. And that did get engaged right after I was on the ground with the guy. But, for example, if you're in a parking lot, a car comes around and you jump out of the way, you go, what was that? And then the fight or flight response kicks in, and now you get all those jumpy muscles and sweating and everything. That's the fight or flight that's come in after. But you jumped out of that danger before you saw it. And the point I hadn't made is that I said all our sensory information goes to the threat detection circuitry in the brain, and it does, but what I didn't say is it goes there first. It's a high-speed pathway. That rushing car coming into your peripheral vision goes to this threat the amygdala, doesn't form an image. You don't see it. It's more like a motion detector. It goes to the threat detection mechanism very fast. That shouldn't be there. It activates this response, and then that information goes to your visual cortex, and then you begin to be able to form an image. So, and then the fight or flight mechanism kicks in to allow you to deal with that. So when my daughter and I were running for 2 hours from this gang, yeah, the fight or flight mechanism is what gave us the stamina and the sharpened mental acuity to outwit that gang. But that first response was a little different.
So, in our final moments, let's talk a little bit more on how we can, control our rage. Any general advice along those lines?
No, the mechanism, I think, is we don't want to control when this works right. We want to prevent misfires. So, in that impulse, if you can identify why you're suddenly angry, you can inhibit it. Because if it's a misfire, the rage goes away. So that is possible. I interviewed the SEAL Team 6 member, and I told him about, my reaction in Barcelona and how it terrified me. And he said, yeah, I would never do that. I don't gamble, And here's a guy who could, take this robber out with a judo chop while ordering a pizza on his cell phone, right? But he says, no, I'd never do it. I'd give him my wallet. These guys train to inhibit this response or to use it appropriately. The last thing I'd like to say, or take that question a different way is the last part of the book is how this relates to groups of people, coworkers, nations, war, because leaders of groups are being driven by somebody's mind. These are the same triggers, and people will not engage in violence of war unless one of these life mark triggers are tripped. And so two things about controlling things, because right now, or many times, politicians will artificially press on some of these triggers to provoke a war, provoke people to fight. And we need to be aware of that. So in terms of controlling our behavior, understanding that the group behavior, wars, result from these same triggers. We've talked about tribe, we've talked about stop, that's blockades. I could go through many of them.
And this is fascinating, but we have less than 30 seconds.
Okay, so just being aware of these triggers being tripped in your interpersonal, in yourself, in interpersonal interactions, and on a societal level will allow us to utilize this amazing circuitry to the best benefit, guard against it being manipulated, and avoid inappropriate misfires of this circuit, which is what we call snapping.
Thank you so much for being with us. Doug Fields is the author of Why We Snap, Understanding the Rage Circuit in Your Brain. Thanks very much to Marika Suval for producing this hour. Thanks to Christy Taylor for on-air direction. And thanks to Cheryl Gasser and Nyasia Ellison for on-air production. This is the Ideas Network.